Well, it's just approaching 22 years.
You don't look old enough.
Thank you very much.
That'll be due to all those wonderful skincare products you sell, I'm sure. How did you get that job in the first place?
Well, I'd been working for a local cable television channel in Croydon, and I just went for an audition. My agent at the time sent me for an audition for a brand new concept, a shopping channel, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure about this, you know, maybe I'll stay 6 months, you know, as you do as a jobbing presenter. And I got through the first round of auditions, had to talk for 5 minutes about a pencil.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And that is much harder than you think it's going to be.
It really was, because they didn't warn us in advance. We had to prepare a product. And remember, we're nearly 22 years ago. I talked about a mobile phone, which in those days was like a brick.
All this new fandangled technology.
Yeah. So you had to do 10 minutes on that, on your prepared product. And then they just said, right, okay, here's a pencil, talk about it for 5 minutes. And it was that you had no preparation time.
Gosh, just I could be it. Really, really cruel and make you do that for us now, but I'm not sure. It might be not the most enlightening broadcast ever.
I'm so glad the listeners couldn't see my face then.
I mean, what on earth did you say about a pencil for 5 minutes?
I think I talked about, you know, you could get them in different colours and you could get them in different leads, you know, depending whether you were writing or drawing or...
I love it.
Yeah.
So. Brilliant. And then look, 22 years later, still going strong. And if you look at the growth of shopping TV in general, I mean, it's just massive now.
It's fantastic. And we've got about 27 million viewers now, which is
But
crazy.
Also, people get to know the presenters, don't they? So they start to view you as a friend. So if you say to them, look, this is a fantastic product, they're going to believe you.
I think so. And I think, to me, the two most important things about having been at QVC all this time is honesty and trust. Mm. So as you say, people now know me and they know that I won't overclaim what something will do. Although it is down to personal opinions. You know, I might love a fragrance, for example, that we're selling. You can't smell it. You're sat at home. You've got to have faith in me. But then you've got the safety net. If it's not right, you can send it back.
Mm. Yeah. You've now written a book, your first novel, Life's a Beach and Then. And it's very much, well, they say, don't they, write about what you know. And you very much base this on subjects very close to your own heart.
Well, I have. It was not funny, because it wasn't funny at all. But I'd been poorly. I'd been diagnosed with chronic myeloid leukemia about 10 months before I started writing this book. And what had happened was that we'd gone on holiday, because I'd had a course of sort of oral chemotherapy treatment, which is different from, you know, having to go into hospital and losing your hair and everything. It's a much gentler form of treatment. However, I wasn't sure if it was going to work or not, so I'd carried the burden of having the secret. I hadn't told anybody about it.
Gosh.
And then I told people in the January, and then in the March we went on holiday, because I knew the treatment was working. And the plan was to completely relax. On the first morning of the holiday, I sat bolt upright and I said to my other half, I've had an idea for a novel. And he just sort of looked at me as if to say, oh no. And the whole holiday, we were there for 10 days in Mauritius, and we'd never been before, so it was kind of like a lifetime holiday, as a treat, because I'd been so poorly. And the whole holiday, walking along the beach, sat at dinner, watching the sunset, swimming up and down a pool, because I was doing a charity swim a couple of months after that. And it was just completely full of my characters, one of whom, Rosemary, has the same type of leukemia, but unfortunately she's developed a mutation. And her prognosis and outcome in the book are very different from my own.
Right. Gosh, you must have very understanding husbands. That whole holiday was taken up with you writing a novel. I'm really interested in something you said before, the fact you didn't tell anyone that you had leukemia. Why?
Well, it's very strange when somebody says, okay, when I went along and had the blood tests, they then wanted to do a bone marrow biopsy, and then I had to wait 10 days for the results of that. And in my head, I already had accepted that it probably was leukemia, because I'm sure they wouldn't do a bone marrow biopsy, which is painful, unpleasant, and unless they thought
there was a strong possibility.
Mm. So when I went back to see my consultant and meet him for the first time, he said, okay, so we've got the results, and yes, you have got it. And he really did say it in that kind of matter of fact tone, and I just said to him, okay, is there any chance there could be a mistake? And he said, no, you know, it's 50 whatever percent certain, you know, that you've got the malfunctioning chromosome. And he just, I said, well, what do we do? And that was my approach to it. And I wanted everything in my life to be as normal as possible. So the only person at QVC that I told actually what I had was my direct boss, because once I started on the drugs, I was very tired and didn't feel very well for a few weeks. I only ever had 4 days off work after my diagnosis. But I asked him if they could keep me on air, maybe give me shorter shifts. So my other half used to drive me into work. I would go on air, do 2 hours on air, and then go home.
Right.
And that went on for about 4 or 5 months, the first part of it. And then I said to my boss at work, well, I'm feeling a bit better now. And so they gradually started to increase my workload again. But nobody had really noticed that I wasn't doing as much as usual. The viewers hadn't noticed.
You didn't look ill then?
No, I didn't. I mean, without makeup on, I did look a little bit ropey, I will be honest with you, but makeup's a wonderful thing.
The wonders of makeup. Where would we be without it?
I know,
Julia?
And so's lighting. So I got away with it. And then I think the reason I didn't tell people was because I wanted to give them good news that I was actually, you know, on the way to remission. That's what I've been aiming for. It's taken me 3 years, but I actually hit remission about 8 weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Gosh, when you get that news, it must be such a huge relief.
You know, the funny thing is, I was more emotional when I got that news than when I was told I had CML. So, yes, you're absolutely right. It was a huge relief.
What took you to the doctor in the first place?
A health check. And I would say to anybody, if you're feeling massively tired for a reason you don't understand, probably go and see your doctor. But I QVC run a health check policy,
right,
which I was entitled to, and I went along and everything was fine except one of my blood test results. And on the day, the doctor said to me, everything's fine, you know, your cholesterol's good, this is good, heart rate's good, we're just going to send one of your blood tests off for, you know, to be double checked. And he was very matter of fact. And 2 days later, I was just going to go on air, and I got a phone call from him, and he said, okay, so can you talk? And I said, yeah, all right. And he said, well, we've had the results back, and you need to see a consultant haematologist as soon as possible. So sort of
not
mild
the words
panic.
You want to hear,
no.
Yeah.
And I just said, well, okay. Can you give me a clue what you think it is? And he said, well, I don't know, and I wouldn't, you know, want to guess. He said, but there's a strong possibility that it could be a type of leukemia called CML. And obviously then, you know, the words were out of his mouth, and it's in your brain then.
Of course it is.
So I went on air, managed to get through that.
You carried on. You went back on air after getting that news.
Oh, yeah.
How did you hold it together?
I don't know. I think you just do, you know, when you
magic do. Magic of the red light.
Absolutely. So, you know, got home. My son was staying with us at the time, and I didn't say anything to him. But when my other half got in from work, he's a musician, I said, oh, okay, we've had a bit of bad news. And then I think I was a little bit upset. But then went to see, that was on the Thursday, saw somebody on the Monday when they did the bone marrow biopsy, and that was it, really.
Gosh, what a journey.
I was very lucky, though. Lucky. The main character is a girl called Holly, who she is a single parent, and she's brought up her son. She didn't want him to have a string of uncles, in inverted commas, so she's been single for his entire life, and he's now at university. And she's got a fabulous job. I won't tell you what it is. But
she work on a shopping channel by any chance?
I do love my job, actually. But no, she gets to go to 5-star destinations around the world.
Oh, nice.
She has to have a cover story because people are not supposed to know what her job is.
Okay.
When she goes to Mauritius, she meets up with a couple called Robert and Rosemary, who actually live in Woldingham.
Uh-huh.
Right about what you know again. And they suspect that there's something more to Holly. They see an underlying sadness in her. They introduce her to a friend of theirs who is a writer called Philippe, who she has a spark of interest towards, and he back to her. So there is a romance element. It gets quite complicated, and she gets very disillusioned with him when she returns to England because of something he's done. can't tell you too much more. But it's also about the relationship between Holly and Rosemary, who the relationship develops very quickly, and it's a mother-daughter relationship because Holly's estranged from her own mother, who would never see her after she got pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah.
So all kinds of dynamics at work within this. I love the fact that Robert and Rosemary live in Waldenham, of course, your hometown. Does that mean there are lots of local mentions? Will people who know the area recognise certain things within the book?
They might do. I mean, it's the second half of the book, part of it is set in Waldenham. We do go to Robert and Rosemary's house. I've always wanted to live where their imaginary house is, looking over the valley. We didn't live there.
That's the great thing about being a writer, though. You can live vicariously through your characters.
Absolutely. And it is, it's quite an emotional journey, you know, when you're writing about these people, because that's the most important thing I would say to any writer. You have to believe these people are real, because if you don't believe it, nobody else will. Mm. So for me, Holly's a real person, and her son Harry is her son, and she adores him and he adores her, and they have this fabulous relationship. Robert and Rosemary love each other. They found each other quite late in life. And, you know, the story really is about how he's going to cope when she's gone, because she is terminally ill. And, you know, and then Holly's relationship with Rosemary and Holly's relationship with Philippe. So these people are all real to me. I believe in them. And it's part one of a trilogy. So at the back of the book, I've already put the beginning of the next book.
And you're looking to donate some of the profits to charity.
I am. Yeah. My previous book, where I actually talked about having had polio as a baby, I donated some money to British Polio Fellowship and also to End Polio Now campaign. So this one, because without them, I may well not even be sitting here talking to you. Mm. Without charities that fund research into the new drugs for cancer, which is why I've been able to continue my life as normally as I have over the last 3 years, research would be way, way behind where it is now. Mm. So it's important to me. So Leukemia and Lymphoma Research is the charity that I've selected, because they've been very good to me.
So you now have survived leukemia and polio.
I know, they keep coming at me. And
don't they? And you're like, no, you're not getting me yet. I'm not ready.
Take that one on the chin.
Yeah.
I don't know, I seem to bounce back. It's funny, when I'd had the polio and dealt with that and decided to be a professional dancer.
Wow. So, how old were you when you got the polio diagnosis?
14 months. So really it was my parents that had to cope with that. I mean, obviously I've had to live with it throughout my life, but the actual diagnosis and dealing with a child, a very sick child, that was down to my parents. So I'm very thankful to them that they decided that I wasn't going to stay in a caliper, a leg iron, for my entire life, which is how I left hospital in 1957. And they just insisted that I was, you know, I was going to do swimming and I was going to do dancing and I was going to be able to walk on my own 2 feet.
Mm. Does it affect you at all today?
Yes, it does. I mean, I do have a slight limp, which when I'm tired is more obvious. And also, something else I may have to face is that 85% of people who had polio in childhood get something called post-polio syndrome, where it comes back to bite you. And basically, your body's worn out, it's tired, you know, where the muscles had wasted away, you've potentially overused the muscles and the nerve endings where you had the problem.
I see.
And so they get tired. So not only that, but the other side of your body where you've had to compensate from, in my case, it's my back a little bit. So I've just, for the first time in my life, had to go and see an osteopath. And they just said, well, you know, for years you've corrected the way you sit and stand, and your back's bound to say, enough,
leave me alone already. Yeah. Gosh, you are a survivor, lady, and then some. My word. What are your plans for the future? Obviously, this is book one of a trilogy. Any other things that you still want to do?
I don't know, really. Maybe a radio show.
I'm only teasing you. Hey, listen, you can have it.
There's all sorts of things I would like to do. I mean, I've often thought about maybe doing a clothing range. I've got my own company called Ripped, and I thought it'd be a good brand name. Even a sort of skincare range, maybe. I don't know. I think the world's your oyster, and as long as you're happy doing what you're doing, that's the main thing. And you know, I've got two fantastic kids, and they're important to me as well. So,
yeah. How did they cope with your diagnosis?
Differently. My daughter was very pragmatic. She keeps a lot hidden. She was incredibly supportive and, right, we're going to research it, Mum, we're going to look at this, we're going to look at that. And my son was shocked, because I think till that point, I think he thought I was invincible.
So but you're with Mum. Of course you are.
Yeah. So he, I wouldn't say he didn't deal with it well. He did, but he kind of stuck his head in the sand a little bit. Sure. And he was living with us at the time, whereas my daughter wasn't. So he saw me every day taking the drugs, and the first 4 weeks was really hard. It was really hard. So he just didn't want to talk about it. He's much better now, and I've had big hugs with him, you know, and he's a big strapping 6'4". So he's great now, and you know, now that I'm in remission, he's brilliant. But yeah, they did deal with it. Interesting question, actually, because they were so different, as in fact they are, as personalities. They're very different.
And people do act very differently, don't they? People react to bad news in all kinds of different ways. You just got to get through the best you can, I suppose. You've been through so much. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Julia Roberts, the book is called Life's a Beach and Then. And I know as well that you have dedicated the book to your friend Stretch.
Yes. I think what I also wanted to do today is to raise awareness that whilst I'm lucky, and that I've sort of got to this point with my leukemia, not everybody survives. It's a fabulous survival rate now because of the new drugs, but my friend Stretch had a different type of leukemia. He had a stem cell transplant, and he was in remission, and then it came back. And we lost him, it's coming up to 2 years ago. So it's very important to me that people are aware that we do still lose people who are very close to us.
Yeah, we need that research. We need to find more drugs and hopefully ultimately a cure. Julia, it's been an absolute pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for inviting me.